on politics or pedagogy.
Thank you, John.
This is John Crumshaw for KPFK with a special Politics or Pedagogy Education Report. You can always pledge your support at kpfk.org.
You're listening to KPFK, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and live around the world at kpfk.org.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Middle East in Focus. I'm Negwa Ibrahim. A family of U.S. citizens in Milwaukee was recently detained by U.S. officials who questioned their immigration status after hearing them speak Spanish, the latest incident of racial profiling amid the Trump administration's anti-immigration crackdown across the country. A relative of the family told reporters that his detained family members were born in Puerto Rico, which is a U.S. territory. People born there are U.S. citizens. The three family members, a toddler, his mother, and his grandmother, were shopping in Milwaukee when they were overheard speaking Spanish. U.S. officials, possibly agents from Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, detained all three soon after, refusing to listen to their protestations until they reached a government facility. The U.S. officials eventually released the three family members, but only after the mother presented their birth certificates. One agent claimed they were so sorry for the error, but upon releasing the family, officials refused to drive them back to where they were initially detained, essentially stranding them and requiring them to pay for their own transportation. And in another incident, more than a dozen members of the Navajo Nation in Arizona and New Mexico were reportedly swept up in the immigration raids, with U.S. officials refusing to accept their tribal identifications as valid proof of citizenship. These latest incidents of racial profiling is consistent with the Trump administration's blueprint for nationwide mass deportations. Earlier this month, White House border czar Tom Homan said that the operation would likely include, quote, collateral arrests, end quote. Human rights advocates have warned about exactly this, that the administration's plan will likely be enforced through widespread racial profiling and will have cataclysmic consequences, not only for undocumented people, but also for immigrants who are citizens or authorized to live in the U.S. who may also be targeted for deportation. Since Trump took office, he has signed a slew of anti-immigrant executive orders, including another one that also lays the groundwork for reinstatement of a ban on travelers from predominantly Muslim or Arab countries. Trump's order, entitled Protecting the United States from Foreign Terrorists and Other National Security and Public Safety Threats, relies on the same statutory authority used to justify Trump's 2017 Muslim ban. And according to the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, this order offers an even wider latitude to use ideological exclusion to deny visa requests and remove individuals who have already entered the country. In fact, this order goes beyond Trump's 2017 Muslim ban on travelers from seven predominantly Muslim countries, adding language that deny people visas or entry to the U.S. if they, quote, bear hostile attitudes towards its citizens, culture, government, institutions, or founding principles, end quote, and sets up a process that could lead to removal of those granted visas since January 2021. Joseph Burton, a former State Department official and visa officer, has stated that the new order could give the government a lot of undefined authority to deny a range of visas for students, workers, and education exchange participants. ADC's National Executive Director, Abid Ayoub, said it sets a very dangerous precedent that, quote, this order will allow for the removal of individuals in the U.S. based on what they say, or what they've expressed and what positions they hold. If they attend a protest that the administration may deem hostile, they're going to have their visas revoked and they're going to face removal proceedings, end quote. Now, groups are deciding whether to mount legal challenges to this order that expands the previous Muslim ban order, While other anti-immigrant orders signed by Trump have actually already been facing legal challenges. So with us today to talk about the slew of anti-immigrant executive orders Trump has issued in his first days of office and how they violate both the Constitution and several U.S. laws is our guest, Marjorie Cohen, professor emerita at Thomas Jefferson School of Law, dean of the People's Academy of International Law, and past president of the National Lawyers Guild. She sits on the National Advisory Boards of Veterans for Peace and Assange Defense and is the U.S. representative to the Continental Advisory Council of the Association of American Jurists. Her books include Drones and Targeted Killings, Legal, Moral, and Geopolitical Issues. Welcome, Marjorie Cohen, once again back to Middle East in Focus. We're always so grateful to have you on the show. Are you there, Marjorie? Sorry, we'll just take a few seconds. I think the line just cut off for Marjorie. So just bear with us here as we bring Marjorie back on the line. As we're waiting to bring Marjorie back on the line, one of the things I just want to remind all the listeners, and it's one of the reasons why I do this show, ST Chandler does this show, why we give our heart and soul to this station and to Middle East in Focus, and really our support to all the programmers at KPFK, is because now more than ever is when we need to make sure that we are having airways that can truly share with all of you the knowledge that is needed to really combat any types of injustices that we're seeing out there, and to be able to do that without inhibition and without fear and without being silenced. And so with that, I'm really excited to bring on Marjorie Cohen, who does that every day through her work. We're so grateful to have her as a legal expert and contributor to Middle East in Focus and to KPFK. Welcome, Marjorie Cohen, to Middle East in Focus.
Thanks, Nagwa. Happy to be here.
Okay, Marjorie, I am always, again, so grateful for your work, really appreciative of the recent piece you put out that's really making sure that we have the knowledge that we need to understand the truth behind some of the lawlessness that is being carried out by the Trump administration's executive orders as it relates to immigration. So before we dive into the specifics, can we start off with first talking about the Take Care Clause of the Constitution? And what duties or obligations does it impose on the President of the United States, which is all very relevant to what we're about to talk about?
Yes, well, Article 2 of the Constitution imposes on the President the duty to take care that the laws be faithfully executed. And the Supreme Court has consistently held that the Take Care Clause imposes a duty or obligation on the President to ensure that all executive branch officials obey Congress's commands, and additionally, that the Take Care Clause does not give the President the authority to frustrate legal requirements imposed by law. So he has a duty to make sure that the laws are carried out.
Now, can you elaborate now specifically on the relevance of the Take Care Clause of the Constitution and Trump's slew of executive orders on immigration?
Well, as we're going to discuss, many of them violate U.S. and international law. And since Trump has a duty to take care to enforce the law by issuing illegal orders, he is not taking care that the laws be faithfully executed, and therefore he is violating his duty under the Take Care Clause of the Constitution. And when he swore an oath to uphold the Constitution, part of that Constitution is the Take Care Clause.
So just on a separate note, can he then therefore actually be sued for violating that constitutional duty?
Well, he actually has been sued in a number of cases. Yes, very hard to win these cases, but we will talk about them as we go through.
Okay, so in fact, some of the lawsuits do argue that he is violating his constitutional duty with respect to the Take Care Clause.
I think that, yes, that is, it's not a big argument, but it is frequently appended to pleadings where he is, or his administration is, sued for violating other laws, and many of them include the Take Care Clause.
Okay, great. So now let's jump right into some of these executive orders. So let's start with one of Trump's most controversial executive order, his attempt to eliminate birthright citizenship. What does the order say? How is this order unconstitutional? And what legal challenges have already been launched against this order?
Well, the very first sentence of the 14th Amendment says, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. But in direct opposition to that part of the 14th Amendment, Trump has an executive order that claims, beginning on February 19th, children of non-citizens will no longer be treated as subject to the jurisdiction of the U.S. Trump's executive order says that children born in the U.S. will no longer be treated as citizens if their mothers were not legally in the U.S. and their fathers were not U.S. citizens or lawful permanent residents. His order also denies citizenship to children whose mothers were in the country legally on a temporary basis, such as being present under the visa waiver program or with a student, work, or tourist visa, and whose fathers were not citizens or lawful permanent residents. But the 14th Amendment doesn't have any limitations along those lines. And presidents, as I said, do not have the authority to rewrite the Constitution. This is a very serious order because it will deny more than 150,000 children nationwide their birthright to citizenship over the course of the year. It will cut federal funding for foster care services for neglected and abused children and early interventions for infants, toddlers, and students with disabilities. Now, on January 21st, 22 states sued Trump and some of his department heads in U.S. District Court for the District of Massachusetts, alleging that that order violates the 14th Amendment, separation of powers, the Immigration and Nationality Act, and the Administrative Procedure Act. The plaintiffs are requesting a declaration that Trump's order violates the Constitution and U.S. laws, as well as a permanent injunction preventing its enforcement. And that does mention the Take Care Clause, that particular complaint. The complaint says the Citizenship Clause's text and history, as well as judicial precedent and longstanding executive branch interpretation, confirm that the clause automatically confers citizenship on all individuals born in the U.S. and subject to its jurisdiction, regardless of the citizenship or immigration status of their parents. There was another lawsuit filed by the ACLU and other community groups against Trump and some of his officials, also requesting declaratory and injunctive relief to stop the order from going into effect. And U.S. District Court Judge John Coffiner in the Western District of Washington temporarily blocked Trump's order nationwide. He called it blatantly unconstitutional, so that birthright citizenship that Trump purported to end with his executive order has been suspended.
So I just have one quick follow-up question. So how do you respond when you know, Trump and those that support Trump will try to claim that this executive – so one of the things we talked about on this show with a previous guest is how executive orders can't create new constitutional amendments. It can't rewrite the Constitution. It can't create new laws. That it can – what it can sometimes do is reinterpret existing laws. What do you say to those who say that this executive order isn't amending the Constitution, but rather just providing the proper interpretation of the constitutional amendment, the 14th Amendment?
That's what courts are for. And this has been suspended while the courts consider the merits and while the courts consider whether Trump's executive order is a correct interpretation of existing law or not. And we're talking about the Constitution and the statutes that I mentioned.
So now then let's turn to other executive orders that, again, are in direct violation of existing laws and direct violation of the Constitution. Let's turn to Trump's order declaring a national emergency at the border. What does that order say and authorize, and how does the order violate the Federal Aviation Administration and Federal Communications Commission regulations or policies?
Well, Trump's order declares a national emergency at the southern border. He says, he wrote, America's sovereignty is under attack, and he claims that there is an invasion. And we're going to talk about that a little later, what really is an invasion. Trump wrote in this order, I hereby declare that this emergency requires the use of the armed forces, unquote. Now, by declaring a national emergency at the southern border, Trump can use Department of Defense funds for immigration enforcement, and he can use the military and the National Guard to help patrol the border and build a border wall. But active duty federal military forces cannot provide direct law enforcement assistance in searches, seizures, detentions, arrests, or interrogations. This order that Trump signed authorizes the construction of additional physical barriers, that's his border wall, at the southern border, and the use of drones. And it waives all Federal Aviation Administration and Federal Communications Commission regulations or policies that would restrict their use within 5 miles of the border. So those two federal agencies have said that drones cannot be used within 5 miles of the border, and yet Trump, of course, you know, he doesn't like federal agencies. He's doing everything he can to get rid of them or to replace everyone in them with his loyalists. He cannot rewrite the FAA and the FCC, and yet that's what he's trying to do here.
And are there legal challenges as of yet to that order?
I don't know that there are legal challenges to that particular order, but I think that there probably will be eventually. The most blatant and controversial order was revoking birthright citizenship, and so that is in the courts. But there have been some legal challenges, for example, to his suspension of federal funds, to all federal funding, and I'm going to mention that a little bit later.
Okay.
But I don't know that there's been any specific legal challenges to this specific executive order.
But to your point, it may just be a matter of time before there is, because of the fact
right.
that it's clearly in violation of existing laws and policies as and regulations as it relates to the Federal Aviation Administration and Federal Communications Commission. Okay, so now, one other thing on that. So in order for, I mean, part of why he declared it a national emergency is to be able to then strategically divert Department of Defense funds to then be used for immigration purposes, because one of the things we've also talked about previously on this show is that executive orders can't create situations or interpret legislation that would actually require a budget and money. Really, all they can do is maybe try to divert funds to support and implement an executive order. So what is the likelihood that he'll actually be able to then divert the Department of Defense funds for purposes of immigration enforcement?
Well, once again, NAGWA, it depends upon whether there are legal challenges and what the courts do with them. The Congress, under the Constitution, has the sole power to appropriate funds. And one of the things that Trump promised that he would do, and by the way, he's promised almost all of these things during his campaign. He's making good on his promises, even though they're illegal, most of them, was impoundment, you know, to divert funds that Congress has already allocated to other purposes. And you bet that there are going to be legal challenges to that. So at this point, again, I don't know if there are any lawsuits that have been filed or about to be filed, but I think we can expect that there will be.
Okay, so we have so much more to talk about, and I can see time is running out. So Trump also signed an executive order titled Clarifying the Military's Role in Protecting the Territorial Integrity of the United States. What does this order say and authorize, and how does it currently violate existing laws and the Constitution?
Well, it characterizes the situation at the border as an invasion, and he also says that that invasion includes unlawful mass migration, narcotics trafficking, human smuggling and trafficking, and other criminal activities. And his order says that within 10 days, the Defense Department must deliver a revised unified command plan for the U.S. Northern Command to seal the borders and maintain U.S. sovereignty and security, including repelling invasion in the form of unlawful mass migration and narcotics or human trafficking or other criminal activities. But the military is forbidden from enforcing the immigration laws. The Posse Comitatus Act was enacted in 1878 specifically to end the use of federal troops in overseeing elections in the post-Civil War South. It bars the use of the military to enforce domestic laws, including immigration law. The Posse Comitatus Act specifically forbids the willful use of any part of the Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Air Force, or Space Force as a Posse Comitatus, in other words, power of the county, or otherwise to execute the laws. The only exceptions must be expressly authorized by the Constitution or an act of Congress.
Okay, so that actually does lead into the next question. What is the Insurrection Act? What indications has the administration given suggesting they may invoke it? And how will such attempts to invoke it actually violate the already existing legal precedent of United States versus Abbott?
Well, under the Insurrection Act, the president can deploy the U.S. armed forces, federalize the National Guard, or deputize private militias of non-governmental forces within the United States. There are three sections of the Insurrection Act the president could invoke, only one of which requires the consent of the governor or legislature of a state. First, if the governor or legislature of a state asks the president for assistance to quell an insurrection against the government. Second, if the president decides that unlawful obstructions, combinations, or assemblages, or rebellion against the authority of the U.S. render it impracticable to enforce U.S. or state law in the courts, or third, if any insurrection, domestic violence, unlawful combination, or conspiracy deprives people of a legal right, privilege, immunity, or protection that results in the denial of equal protection or opposes or obstructs the execution of the U.S. laws or impedes the course of justice. Now, Trump has not yet invoked the Insurrection Act. He ordered the Secretaries of Defense and Homeland Security to report to him within 90 days about whether to invoke the Insurrection Act. Invoking the Insurrection Act would allow the president to use military forces inside the United States, not just at the border. If active duty troops are sent to the border, they'll be sent to the border not just to enforce immigration laws, but to repel an invasion. They won't be involved in a law enforcement role, but a military role. And according to Rear Admiral James McPherson, former U.S. Undersecretary of the Army, he said on PBS, that we don't have a war going on at the southern border. We have a law enforcement crisis, perhaps, but that's not an invasion, unquote. If we equate immigration, well, let me just, you mentioned U.S. versus Abbott, and U.S. versus Abbott specifically said that equating immigration with invasion is not legal. That court concluded that surges in immigration do not constitute an invasion within the meaning of the Constitution.
So that, again, helps sort of lead us into the next executive order and helps us understand why Trump keeps trying to use this word invasion, even though legal precedent has clearly established that you actually can't call anything in relation to immigration as a quote-unquote invasion, but he keeps trying to use that word. The next order that he issued was called Protecting the American People Against Invasion. What does this say? And how are local law enforcement agencies and associations, such as the California Police Chiefs Association, actually pushing back on such orders?
Well, this particular executive order revokes three Biden-era executive orders. First, a task force on the reunification of families. So Trump is not that interested in the reunification of families, obviously. Second, strengthening inclusion efforts for new Americans. And third, under Biden, a regional framework to address the causes of migration. It also restricts federal funds to sanctuary jurisdictions. Trump's order directs the Director of Department of Homeland Security to ensure the detention of aliens apprehended for violations of immigration law pending the outcome of their removal proceedings or their removal from the country. So it authorizes state and local law enforcement officials to perform the functions of immigration officers in relation to the investigation, apprehension, or detention of aliens in the U.S. under the direction of the Homeland Security Department. Now, as you said, some local law enforcement agencies don't want to engage in immigration enforcement, and the California Police Chief Association released a statement on immigration enforcement, and they said expected changes in federal immigration enforcement policies have caused fear throughout our immigrant communities, including confusion and uncertainty as to what role local police may play in these new directives. It has never been the role of local police to enforce federal immigration law, nor should it be our responsibility.
So I have one more executive order. I have a few more, but we're not going to get into all of it. So let me ask you about this one specifically. He also signed an executive order to establish a process within 14 days to designate cartels as foreign terrorist organizations or specially designated global terrorists, and announces a plan to use the Alien Enemies Act, which a lot of people have been talking about and wanting to understand better, to expedite the removal of people designated as, quote, terrorists. How does this order actually run contrary to the Alien Enemies Act? And if you could please give us a little bit of insight into what the Alien Enemies Act actually says and does.
Well, this process basically the order calls for the total elimination of these groups in the U.S. And it, as you said, announces a plan to use the Alien Enemies Act to remove people that he calls terrorists. It relies on his determination that there is a qualifying invasion in order to justify the use of Alien Enemies Act. But the Alien Enemies Act requires that invasion or predatory incursion must be undertaken by a foreign nation or government. Congress has not declared war on any country in more than 80 years, nor has any other government invaded U.S. territory since the War of 1812. Drug cartels are not governments of Latin American countries, so the Alien Enemies Act would not apply here.
Okay, so we only have a few minutes left. I want to actually see if you could close out with why it is important to understand how Trump's orders violate the Constitution and existing laws, and how such knowledge, if you can elaborate, because you spoke a little bit about this, is being used and actually can continue to be used to resist Trump's racist anti-immigrant practices and policies, both inside the courtroom and outside the courtroom.
Well, that's a great question, Nagua. People must know that many of his immigration and other policies can be challenged in court and also be the subject of organizing efforts. His freeze of federal funds, they took that back because there was such pushback by Republican Congress members, presumably because their constituents had raised bloody hell, and so he had to suspend it. So, this is all very chaotic, but he is making good on promises that he made during the campaign. Many of them are illegal. They're being challenged in the courts, but it's important that people organize in any way they can, mass actions, pressuring Congress members who do respond to their constituents' pressure, letters to the editor, op-eds, lawsuits, one struggle, many fronts, Nagua.
And again, just a reminder, and that is why we exist here at KPFK. That is why we bring on amazing guests like Marjorie Cohen to really keep us informed, because knowledge is power. With us today, talking about the slew of anti-immigrant executive orders Trump has issued in his first days of office and how they violate both the Constitution and several U.S. laws, has been our guest, Marjorie Cohen, professor of emerita at Thomas Jefferson School of Law, dean of People's Academy of International Law, and past president of the National Lawyers Guild. She sits on the National Advisory Boards of Veterans for Peace and Assange Defense and is the U.S. representative to the Continental Advisory Council of the Association of American Jurists. Her books include Drones and Targeted Killing, Legal, Moral, and Geopolitical Issues. Thank you so much, Marjorie Cohen, for joining us today on Middle East in Focus.
Thanks, Nagwa. Appreciate it.
And everyone, please check out Marjorie Cohen's amazing work. She publishes a lot of articles on various topics. Very, very informative. Please check her out. I want to thank our fantastic engineer, Ozzy. You've been listening to Middle East in Focus. The only reason you can hear us is because you, the audience, always tune in and support us. I hope you keep continuing to support independent radio. We hope you do so that we can keep showing up for you. You can keep showing up for us, and we can keep showing up for each other. Our theme song is the overture from Summer Night's Dream by Marcel Khalife. For KPFK Los Angeles, I'm Nagwa Ibrahim, wishing you all light, love, and peace. Thanks for joining us, and have a great rest of your Sunday.